F2A. The Epistles. The Laws of Scientific Christianity. Number 1A.
This week we'll take the Epistles. And I've sent you study assignment for this week's work. I rely on the fact that you have studied the study material and have done some work on it. So I cannot really go back and explain everything again. Most of it, what we'll be discussing, is fundamentally in the epistle book. If I call the epistle book, I mean the book that is has the title The Epistles on Christian Science, which I edited and printed. So I call it the epistle book. If I want to refer to the epistles, then I refer to the Bible and to the specific epistle which we are going to discuss. In the study assignment, I have asked you, first of all, as a preparation, that you should read my book, the epistle book, so that you have an overall view on the whole subject of the Christianity matrix. Christianity matrix is a central theme of the whole week, and we know that the epistles have to do with Christianity. Therefore, I ask you to study that book from beginning to end, so as to get an overall view. Then, the second question under B was that I said that pages 1 to 39 define the difference between the Old and the New Covenant, namely, between the law and the faith. This difference, I said, should be grasped spiritually in a clear and definite way. And it is actually on this point that I would like to spend today an hour or so to reconsider with you those two great factors which are central for the epistles, especially for Paul's epistles, that he could show or wanted to show that at his time there must be a paradigm shift in consciousness from the law to the faith in God and Christ. So these two terms stand out very clearly in all his writings, and naturally I have written in the book quite extensively on those two terms, the law and on faith. Now, I only want to summarize quickly what is understood under the law and under faith, and want then to overform it to the present age, to a new paradigm shift, which is parallel to what Paul had to do at his time, what we have to do at our time, namely, instead of the law, we have to deal with metaphysics. Instead of the faith, we have to do with science today. So Paul was engaged in a terrific paradigm shift. He had to take the Jews out of the law consciousness and introduce into the consciousness of the Jews, really, and Christians and Gentiles, the law of the Christ, which is faith in Christ, and that we live by faith, and that faith will bring us grace, and that we live by grace. So he had a terrific job. We too today have a terrific job. We too today have to come out of that law, which is today coined metaphysics, and have to come into the faith in God and Christ, which today we can call understanding or science. Now, this is a big subject, and I have put a lot of stress over the last few years, as you know, on that question of metaphysics and science, that we do not confound those two terms. We have confounded them over years and years and years in Christian Science, until we found out that they are two very different attitudes of consciousness. And that as we go on, you can see, I think, or I can make it plain, I think, that you see that actually we have the same paradigm shift, that we have to shift out of a consciousness that is only thinking in terms of metaphysics, which Mrs. Eddy always regards as negative, because she was teaching science, or scientific metaphysics, or divine metaphysics, or Christian metaphysics, but not pure metaphysics. That, she shows in her textbook very clearly, is not what she has discovered, and that was, as we'll see for those who come next week, we'll see that was a great stumbling block in Mrs. Eddy's development, that her students mistook really science for metaphysics and metaphysics for mesmerism. So even if we talk now about two terms that seem to be biblical and that seem to be old, that was 2,000 years ago, we are no more Jews, we are no more concerned if we are circumcised or not circumcised, we are not interested in that, though, like then in Galatians, that term recurs and recurs and recurs until one gets sick of it. One must see that it really introduces a completely new way of consciousness. And that is what I want to bring out. Now, Paul himself as Saul was a very model, very good model Jew. He really tried to be an exemplar for the Jewish law. He tried to follow that law, to be obedient to that law, to stick to that law, to fight for that law, and also to fight against all those who did not accept that law, like Jesus and the Christians. But when he was on the way of Damascus, and when he began to see the light and became as Paul, then he was also a model Christian. No more just a model Jew. And he began to see that he should liberate the Jews from their laws and from obeying only the Jewish law. Just as today we are at that position where we can see metaphysics as such is of negative value, is not that what we should really entertain and or to work with, that we must make that paradigm shift to science that includes divine metaphysics or scientific metaphysics. Now, as a liberator for the Jews, he was preaching the new doctrine. He was preaching that only through faith in God and Christ that we can be saved. And this is something that I have said so, and you have listened to it and said, well, yes, bum, 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 yes, faith in Christ, word and God and Christ, you know, we have heard that all over. And I want to make that more or less one of the main issues of this whole week, that we must see something clearer about that order in faith in the God and Christ. And that I will point out about 100 times, if not more, until I hope it sinks in, because it's a question to my sense of life and death, not nothing smaller than that. So we have to listen really to what has gone on in consciousness at that time. Now, what was the law? If I just want to recapitulate quickly what the Jews understood under the law, or how Paul was inwardly struggling with the law, you could see as the very first thing that the Old Testament laid down a law. Actually, those laws were laid down by Moses, the commandments, and afterwards they were extended and elaborated by the priests and Pharisees and I don't know whom of the Jews, until those laws cover practically every little detail of the Jewish life, as you know, even today. So that every temple was regulated by a law, and therefore the Jews were asked to obey that law, because it gives the promise that if we obey the law, that we will have life eternal. Who wouldn't like that? So Paul too felt, well, I want to have life eternal, therefore I want to be a model of obeying the law. So obedience to the law was always foremost in the Jewish thought, because they knew that this obedience to the law would bring eternal damnation. Nobody likes that. Who would like that? So he tried very hard to obey the law, and so he reasons, well, why should I actually obey the law? What is the law bringing to me? He said, it's that which tells me what is good, and therefore tells me also what is evil. He could see that it makes a line of demarcation between what is good and what is evil. And then he came to a crisis, just as we do. We always have that sense in metaphysics that we obey metaphysics, we obey ideas. For what purpose? Because we say, well, if you obey ideas, we have life eternal. And to obey ideas means that we can distinguish between ideas and illusions. We know ideas are good and illusions are evil, so that we know what is good and what is evil. And if we all ask ourselves how successful we are in that method, we all feel we are not very successful in it. That only too quickly do we fall into illusions and belief in illusions and belief in beliefs, and that it is very, very, very hard really to always stick to ideas. Who can do that? And that is what brought him to the insight that actually, that by obeying the law, he really found out that the law brings sin to his consciousness, that he begins to realize how much he fails in his obedience. And failing in obedience means sin. And so he began to see, actually, I'm a sinner. And so he complains constantly, as you know, that he says, well, the things that I want to do, obedience to the law, I do not. And the things I do not want to do, these things are the things that I do. So he became aware that he's a sinner. He didn't like that. Who would like that, to be a sinner? And so he said, well, sin that dwells in me is really that does it. He said, that I don't have the power within me, the spiritual power within me to obey those laws. The things that I would do, I don't do. Even if I try, if I want to, therefore sin dwells in me. And so he began to see that actually, from that point of view, he's a sinner. Well, he said, well, sin dwells in me. So what shall I do with it? You see, it's the same thing as Mrs. Eddy later on, as we know in her writing, says, well, it is actually sin that sins the sinner. It isn't a mortal that sins. It's actually the sin that sins the sinner. You have that in prose work. Or she says, sin existed as a false claim before the human concept of sin was formed. So, like Paul, also Mrs. Eddy would state that actually sin is not something that we produce or create, but that sin handles us and does not allow us always to obey the law. Therefore, he had to do something about that. And he could see, well, if sin sins the sinner, then can I be blamed for that? So he came to another insight, which was very important, which is then the basis of his letter to the Romans, that he could see that he could never be found justification before God through his works, that he could try and try and try and try again, but that he would never make the grade. Sin would always somehow be at work and detract him from doing what he wanted to do and do what he didn't want to do. So that the whole question of being righteous before God was impossible by obeying the law. That is called the deeds of the law or the works of the law. That is his rendering. You can see very clearly that doing the law, the works of the law, that is what he out of himself tried to do in order to be obedient to the law, and being obedient to the law to get life eternal. And he could see that that is impossible because sin exists in him and dwells in him. And for that he cannot be made responsible. So he would never find righteousness before God through the works of the law. Now if you put works of the law, if you put in place of that, saying through mental work, through metaphysical work, through metaphysical thinking about ideas, see, that's metaphysics, that's doing our works. What do most Christian scientists understand under the term, I'm going to work metaphysically? They mean they sit down and then they concentrate their brain and their thinking on ideas. And pondering these ideas and ideas, they work metaphysically. That's the deeds of the law. And Paul could see that that doesn't work. That in that way he would never find salvation, because there is another power in him he found that was greater than his will, greater than his will to think right and to obey the law, namely that another power dwells in him, and therefore could never find really righteousness before God. He could never be justified before God. And that brought him to the insight that actually that the law alone cannot give life, that the law is rather bringing what the commandments to say obey the law than to see that he cannot obey the law. Therefore he feels I'm a sinner. When he feels I'm a sinner, then he says, then I'm really on the way out. That brings death. Can you see, he started out, or the Jewish law started out, by saying if you obey the law, you have life eternal. And he found out through a order of reasoning that he cannot really find life eternal, but it's the very opposite, the very opposite. And so, finding out that he could suddenly see that Jesus must have worked differently, that Jesus, who did not obey the Jewish law, that he was resurrected, that he found life. And so he said, that man has something which I don't have. He does not obey the law of the Jews and he gets life eternal. And I try to obey the law as well as I can, and I only find out that I'm a sinner and sin leads to death. Can you see the reasoning? And so he could see that Jesus would live by grace and not through the deeds of the law. And so we have another term that Paul brings in, that through faith we live by grace and not through the works of the law. Now that is exactly what we tried to bring out over the last few years more and more, the difference between metaphysics and science. That metaphysics is a burden, that it becomes a burden to life, always to think rightly. Do I think rightly? Were my thoughts right? Were my thoughts not wrong? Why were my thoughts wrong? Why couldn't I think rightly? I must be a sinner. I must not. Apparently, I don't understand science. And you begin to accuse yourself that you never understand enough, that you have studied the science so long and have never really found your peace and your rest and your salvation, that it has led us just the other way and has become a burden and not the grace, that we really don't live by a sense of that we are under grace, and that we get everything for nothing, as a gift of God, as Paul would say. So grace is a gift of God, and therefore he was thinking, well, there must be another law at work, another law at work than the laws of the Jews, and found out that other law was the law of God and of Christ, the law of faith, which he then called. And I will later on explain what he meant by that. So far, I just wanted to bring out the difference between law and faith, and show that these are not two terms, I repeat it again, not two terms that are biblical and that had to do with a paradigm shift in consciousness 2,000 years ago, but that has to do with us today and with a paradigm shift in consciousness from metaphysics to science. I will come back and back again to the same thing. Let's look at another aspect of these epistles. Where do the epistles appear in the Bible, in the long range of the Bible? We know that the beginning of the Bible, we have the five books of Moses. We call them five books of Moses, you call them differently, Genesis, Exodus, and so on, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and then the Exodus, Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. And that brings us up to a new period that starts out with Samuel and starts out with the prophets. The kingdom period are the prophetic era. And with the prophetic era, really the law has been set fundamentally, because in the first part up to Ruth, we have the law, the commandments, set down by Moses, and so the Jews always were speaking of the laws and the prophets when they were referring to the Old Testament. The first part of the Old Testament was the law, and then with Samuel, with the announcement, so to say, of the Christ, we come to the prophetic age, which is the Christ. So we have in the Old Testament the Word and the Christ, as you know. I don't tell you something new, but I will tell you why it is new. And then we come to the New Testament that introduces then the Gospel and the Acts of the Apostles and the Epistle of the Apostles. They all introduce now the outcome of that Christ announcement, where Jesus came and said, I am that Christ. And so he was practicing that Christ, living that Christ, and that is Christianity. Christianity, or what I like to call Christianity. And only at the end of the Bible we have Revelation that also starts out again with the Word and the Christ and Christianity, and introduces at the end just a slight image or picture of science with the four sides of the Holy City. So that when we ask where are the epistles, then we see that within the whole range of the four sides of the Holy City, we have Christianity as a third side, as that point where we have the true sense of man being demonstrated. We know that the Word has to do with the Word of God, with a statement of the nature of God. We know that the Christ is that which comes from God to the world, to mankind, and that Christianity has to do with the outcome of that Christ message from God to man, and has to do with the establishment of the true man, of true manhood. So our whole subject this week has the accent on the third side of the holy city, on Christianity, where really man stands in the center as a central idea. The Son, here he said, can do nothing but what he sees the Father do. We can see here the place value that Christianity has to have first, God, the Father. I can only do what he sees the Father do. But we also see that Christ is what? The coincidence of God and man. So without the Christ there would be no possibility to do what the Father does, because there would be no connection between man and God. So that which establishes the unity between God and man is called the Christ. Christ is that spiritual agreement, Mrs. Eddy defines, a spiritual agreement between God and man in God's image and likeness. So we have to see that Christianity comes after the Word and after the Christ, and only then Christianity comes into focus, then man comes into focus, and that therefore man can only be really man, as what Paul says, through the Christ Spirit, all men are sons of God. He shows that we cannot have man without the Christ, and the Christ we cannot have without the Father. So we have a threefold order at this very point. So at that point, Paul could say, we receive the adoption of sons. So that's his focal aim. How can we bring out in man the perfect man? And in order to do that, really, we have to see that that is the outcome of something. And the outcome of the Father, who has a Christ, the Christ Spirit. Now, this is very simple. You know that. I know you know that. And yet I repeat it. Because I want to show you during the whole week that we don't do that. That's where we fail, is that we don't realize what that means. And that's very important. How can I show that? Well, there are a few points that I want first to touch in order to go into it. Yes.